Hello pals, Ben here. There is a lot to hammer through this week, so eyes down, let's crack on. First of all, thank you to all my well wishes this week. I popped up a little mewling post on my socials on Tuesday to say that finally, after 2 years, I had been blessed by a visitation from the COVID fairy. I am delighted to say it's not been too severe. But as that pause will attest to, the thing I've suffered from most is brain fog. So really glad that my job doesn't rely on quick wits and verbal dexterity in any way. But I am happily, swiftly back on the mend. Next to say thank you to loads of you who've been in touch for various reasons on various parts of our communication network. Hello first of all to Jenny, who popped us an email in reference to our previous show, very possibly to alleviate the concerns and worries of any nervous flyers. Jenny says, please don't listen to the idiot in the next seat. I'll be honest, I don't know whether this is a metaphorical idiot or she's referring to me or Barry or both of us or our guest. Nevertheless, she reassures us that planes are never allowed to run out of fuel and crash. A pilot will declare a mayday and either land there and then, or divert. I mean, to me, landing there sounds like crashing, but I don't want to provoke the ire of Jenny any further. She suggests if you would like the opinions of experts on this, you should listen to the podcast Black Box Down, and they will give you a lowdown on some very, very good pilots and possibly some bad pilots who didn't make our cut. Next, hello to Jeremy Vitas, who sent us a long, lovely email about all the ways he has enjoyed and binged the podcast in every conceivable environment in and out of his home. He also suggested a possible guest for the show. Now, I'm not going to tell you who that is because we might not get them. But if you know of a person or would like a person to be a guest, you're always very welcome to suggest them to us. You can do that for free. Whereas, obviously, if you want to propose a topic for the show, that'll cost you on the old Patreons. So patreon.com/worstfootforward. And if you give us a fiver a month, you can nominate a topic to be done. A week tomorrow, I think we're recording a lovely little episode for the World's Worst Wedding Ceremony, which is a Patreon podcast we have been trying to line up for quite a while. I think others we have Popstar, which we have had three guests say yes and then no to, which we're trying to nail down as a Patreon one, and also World's Worst Librarian, which just feels in a real sweet spot for the podcast. And honestly, guys, almost every time we get a suggestion from a Patreon of a World's Worst something, it's something me and Barry hadn't thought of, and very often slap our foreheads and go, but why hadn't we thought of it? It's so obvious. So if you want to help stimulate our creativity, head to Patreon, chuck us a fiver a month, and nominate a topic. Oh, yes, another person who's been in contact, regular correspondent Petter Brodin, had a great article he sent us. This is not really for a worst pilot, but the Netherlands recently proudly showed off their very first F-35A fighter plane, and the aim of the launch was to give it a water cannon salute, so sort of looking like one of those, some of those jumping fountains, I guess, that you get in Universal Studios. Instead, someone didn't get the memo, and instead, this new fighter pilot got a foam bath on its inaugural parade down the runway. The photos are hilarious and quite adorable for a rollout of military hardware. So yeah, thank you everyone for getting in touch with that. And this week of all weeks, we'd very much like you all to get in contact. As you'll know, next week is episode 250, and to celebrate, we're doing a podcast where we're going to have contributions from former guests. Myself and Barry are going to do some contributions about parties and birthdays and cake. But we'd also love contributions from you. Please do get in contact either with some of your favourite moments of the show, or more pertinently, some of your personal favourite trivia. If it's about failure, great. If it's about celebrations and birthdays and parties, great. Or if it's just an absolute humdinger of a fact, then that is also very welcome in this parish. You can send it to worstfootforwardpodcast@gmail.com. Barry's editing this one together, the fool, but I imagine if you want to get featured in the show, probs Wednesday or Thursday is the cutoff point, I imagine. And yeah, so we hope you really enjoy that. I'm going to tell you some other stuff, but I'm not going to. I'm going to keep my powder dry. I'm going to keep my powder dry until next week, or possibly a little after. That was a bit cryptic, wasn't it? That was a little bit you okay, hun, on Facebook. Safe to say, there are going to be some changes almost entirely for the good around here after our big celebration next week, and hopefully, potentially, some news too. But I shall stop tantalising you with my opaque nonsense, because some of you are going, it's been really tantalising us, or is he having a little COVID relapse? Answer, both. That is all from me at the head of the episode for this week. All that remains for me to say is prepare your grimoires, your pointy hats and your wands, because we are getting down into the magical depth this week of the world's worst wizard, Alakazam!
Hello and welcome to Worst Foot Forward, where we celebrate the best of the worst. I'm Barry McStay, and each week I, my co-host and our guest, propose our candidates for the title of the world's worst something. This week, we are seeking out the world's worst wizard, and the word wizard has an interesting quality in that W, I and Z are the 23rd, 9th and 26th letters of the alphabet. But if you were to flip the alphabet around, then the letters A, R and D are the 26th, 9th and 23rd letters, making them the reverse of the first three. It's a sort of a magic mirror word, which is the sort of fact that confirms once and for all that Susie Dent probably has magical powers. As if we never doubted that in the first place. And alongside me is the Yen to my Sid, the Gan to my Dalf, and the Harry Potter to my trans women are women. It's Ben
Ronald. I wondered if we'd get to that, yeah.
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 Let's put it out early doors. You type the word wizard into the internet and fuck me, the internet wants you to talk about Harry Potter. Yeah. If we've said it on the podcast before, anytime we do a football-based episode, you try and find anything about football that predates Sky and the Premiership and it is almost impossible.
I mean, I've got all we need to say about Harry Potter is he is a jock that becomes a cop.
Yeah.
That's it.
Oh, that is pithily dealt with. I
can't take credit. It got it from the internet, but yeah.
It's so true.
Do you know what? I'm amazed that I'm going to be able to say this, but you're right. That is a problem whenever we do a football-based podcast. What a remarkable world that we live in, that it would appear that the Premier League is more politically progressive than J.K. Rowling. That's a sentence I didn't think I'd be able to say a few years ago.
But really not that hard, actually, in the end.
No, not at all.
Let's be clear, Newcastle is owned by Saudi Arabia, so there's peaks and troughs all over the place with this.
The organisation, the Premier League, broadly speaking, yes. My own football club that I've now had to reject, no. Yes. I mean, I'll tell you what, my football strip with the lightning stripe on it and NUFC Quidditch forever is just ruined. Ruined. Barry, thank you for not referring to me as the rinse to your wind as well. It was right there.
Yeah, it was one of the options when I wrote that. That rule of three dictated that I had to leave it out. You and I played D&D. Have you ever played a wizard character?
No, I've only ever been
You must be a bard, are you?
Halfling? No, I was a halfling, thief, monk.
Good.
Yes. Niche, I like it. I was always a warrior because you didn't have to learn anything. Like everything else, like spells and stuff. With warrior, it's like roll for how much you're going to get dead, and that's fine.
Yeah. Yeah, I always like that the wizards are sort of the nerds of the magic characters in D&D, because you got the warlocks who have like a pact with some greater being, and you've the sorcerers who have innate magic, and the wizards are the ones who've had to go to like magic university and study hard to get their qualifications.
Of course, yeah, the wizards are the ones, you know,
the mathletes, yes.
I like that. The alchemathlete.
Yeah.
It is an incredible thing to make something as raw and exciting and elemental as magic be reduced to essays.
Yeah, it's a recipe book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've got a lot of love for wizards from the Discworld books. I was never a big swords and sandals or fantasy guy apart from Pratchett, and I adore the Wizards of Unseen University because they're preposterous, not because they're something to aspire to, but I have a great
I've read a lot of Pratchett as a kid, and it wasn't until I went to university until I realized it was basically a documentary about universities. Like, it's just so true.
Yes, 100% that. And also the fact that these are such preposterous men with so much power. Yeah. And
much like the Tory cabinet at the moment, really, isn't it?
With more naps, maybe.
More naps, yeah.
Yeah. Well, do you know what? If there is a threat that one accidental keystroke is going to fundamentally unravel reality as we know it, probably best to get 40 winks in when you can.
Yeah.
Our guest this week is a children's author, and she is represented by a previous guest on the show, Molly Kerr Horn. Molly talked about the world's worst fictional children. However, she was thankfully tight-lipped on the world's worst factual clients. Our guest began her career writing carefully researched books about space, ancient Egypt, politics, and science. What a mashup that would be if she threw them all into one, but eventually lapsed into just making stuff up. Don't we all? That's how I write my CV, anyway. She enjoys writing about dragons, wizards, vampires, fairies, monsters, and parallel worlds, and has written dozens of non-fiction and story titles for Usborne and beyond. She has also worked as an editorial director, and most excitingly of all, she has just released a book that is splattered over bookshops the country wide. There is not a window that you can look in a Waterstones or a Foyles that probably won't have the title Loki, A Bad God's Guide to Being Good, in which the trickster god Loki comes to Earth tasked by Odin to learn how to be a better person, and it doesn't go well. Joining us is the creator of Loki's latest incarnation, and between you and me, I think it's probably going to be better than Tom Hiddleston's brand of smarm. It's a delight to welcome to the show, Louis Stowell.
Hello, thank you.
You're very welcome.
It is very true. It is very true. I literally walked through Waterstones last week. There was a veritable library's worth of Loki. Excellent. In the window in Covent Garden. Yes, you've taken the world by storm. I have to say, it's very canny to tie in with Marvel without tying in with Marvel.
Yeah, well, the thing is, you can't copyright a 1,000-year-old deity, you know?
Yeah.
But I sort of feel that the Norwegian government, being the canny folk that they have and having their sovereign investment fund, they will somehow have tied it into that. Like, you know, or that they, you know, that every time someone operates a hammer, then it goes into their Mjolnir fund. Or they're...
Is that why the Swedes have IKEA?
Yeah.
So it's like they're just adding to the Mjolnir fund.
Surplus, you know, it's not about their gas, it's all about the money.
Yeah, oh my word, well that's what we need to do. Obviously we're all trying to decouple ourselves from Russian energy at the moment, so if we could just hook ourselves up to Asgard.
Yeah, ancient god.
Yeah.
Ancient gods.
I like that, the idea you've used all of this factual research and history stuff, and now finally you're weaponizing it in the world of fiction.
Yeah, because I did a book of Norse myths with another colleague, and he wrote all the stories about Thor, and I did all the Loki ones.
Nice.
So I did an awful lot of research then, and that research was just sitting around in my brain, so I might as well turn it into something.
And what was was there a discussion beforehand? Did you have to flip heads or tails to see
no,
who
we
got
just
Thor and who got the exciting
way.
One? Okay, yeah, because Loki's definitely the more fun stories.
I got the better end of the deal. Especially because I got to do the ring cycle, which I was really, again, really obsessed with as a kid, because I play trumpet, and it's like Wagner's one of the composers that actually gives trumpet players something to do. So I got very into the ring cycle, and then went on to read the Norse version of it, and it was even weirder, which is good.
Yeah, amazing.
That's great. And look, Loki is quite a he's quite a taboo breaking sexy god, from what I know about him. So did you find that you had to sanitize much of his tales when writing for kids?
No, I mean, there's one story called Lokasenna where he insults people in very rude ways, which I've not mentioned that. But actually, I've got the fact that he turns into a lady horse and gives birth in the story, and that's fine. Like, the kids know that happens, right?
Tom Hiddleston hasn't done that one yet.
And, you know, he's definitely, he's not kind of fixed gender. And I feel like that's all stuff that kids are perfectly au fait with. And, you know, I'm not going to go into detail in romance, but partly because I don't care and not interested in romance. But yeah, I think he's actually a great opportunity to kind of inspect humanity from the outside, because he is this kind of ambiguous, ambivalent figure who isn't necessarily kind of within the structures of normal morality, or kind of denies that there is such a thing as normal. So it's sort of fun to make fun of our assumptions using him.
Yeah, it's so interesting that obviously people are so drawn to him as a character in a world where we're meant to live by the rules. Mm. People always just want to know more about the people who break them.
Yeah, I think it's sort of it's a bit like the Matrix. It's kind of the people that see through all the nonsense and realize what the world's really about, and realize that actually, if you want to, you can do anything. And I think that was the thing I wish I realized as a child, because actually that's your one opportunity in life to do something with almost no consequences. And I always followed the rules as a kid. And actually with Loki, I'm like, you don't have to. You can do what you want.
Yeah. Yeah, the rules as a kid are like, don't eat too many sweets or don't watch too much TV. Nowadays, you know, you can get put in prison. But you can't get put in prison for that sort of stuff.
No, but I sort of thought I could, you know? Like, there's this sort of like rule framework in your head.
Yeah, the panopticon that you have parents around you at all times.
Big sweetie.
Harry Potter and the Panopticon of Parents. Yeah. It's coming soon. Also, we've learned that you're very good at doing your research and finding new ways of telling old stories. What are you not so good at? What are you worst at in the world?
So I had a big think about this, because I wanted to do something not too humiliating, but not something that's like the sort of thing you say in a job interview where I'm like, I'm so bad at being awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, no, the other way around. I'm so bad at being rubbish. I am very bad at losing. I'm a very sore loser. So I remember playing Guitar Hero with my in-laws once, and I get really angry with the rules, and I was like, I'm a musician, I'm swinging this, and I'm not getting any money for like doing any points for doing a swung rhythm. What the hell?
It's gotta be so on the beat.
What? You want me to be some kind of robot? And also when I remember doing a pub quiz that was for charity, so I should have been behaving myself, and I got into a bit of an argument with the caller about the right answer. So I've actually taken to telling people I'm not competitive and don't like playing games. What I mean is, I don't like who I am when I play games.
Oh, that's a very good bit of self-knowledge there.
They need to invent Jazz Guitar Hero.
Yes, so Jazz Guitar Hero.
It's about not pressing the buttons. That's how you score.
There are few forces on earth more powerful than that of someone who feels they have been wronged in a pub quiz.
Yes. It was
the level of fury.
It was which Blake poem contains the lines "and did those feet?" And the pub's answer was Jerusalem. Like, no, that's the hymn. Poem was Milton.
Yeah.
Obviously, I'm fun on.
Yeah. Before we kick off, we should say this is a Patreon podcast. One of our noble listeners who donated £5 a month to have the honour of suggesting a topic has made this happen. So a big shout out to Brian Chaffin. Thank you so much for your regular donations. And thank you for nominating, World's Worst Wizard as today's topic. We hope you enjoy what we're going to talk about. And Barry, it is you that is going to do the talking first.
Is it? I thought it was you, but thanks.
No, you're right. It's me.
Just a test.
Thank you very much, Brian. And Ben, you're the first one to dip your wick into the cauldron.
I am. So, first of all, there is a wizard who was on the payroll of government in this century. Any ideas what country he lives in?
I have read about Ian Brackbury Channel.
There you go.
He's the Wizard of New Zealand.
He is the Wizard of New Zealand. He had been living in Christchurch for 24 years when the city offered him an official wizarding contract. And his role means he has to provide acts of wizardry and other wizard-like services as part of the promotional work for the city of Christchurch. And what I love about this is before the Lord of the Rings shenanigans kicked off.
Yeah, it was 1998 he got the job.
Yeah, but he just wanders round the city being a wizard, as far as I can see.
Yeah, he'd been living there for a while. He was English originally, and he moved to New Zealand in 1974, and he began speaking on a ladder in Cathedral Square in Christchurch, basically, you know, not ranting and raving, but just talking out in public. And they tried to have him arrested, the city council, but he became so popular with locals and tourists that they made the square a public speaking area instead. And so he would speak with a wizard's pointy hat at lunchtime over the summer, and he would, you know, he protested against the colour of public telephone boxes, he heckled Christian evangelists, he evaded the census, he performed rain dances, or he hosted a wizard's gathering in Christchurch in 1995, which involved a wizard's nest being built on top of the university library tower, and then the wizard, the New Zealand wizard, hatching from a giant egg in the city art gallery, skydiving while chanting a spell for a major rugby match and performing loads of rituals. And then he came down on a gondola from the Ports Hills with tablets bearing the address of his new website on it.
I feel like as a country we failed. Like, where's our wizard?
Well, he's English. That's the thing. He was from here as well.
Yeah, but like,
they missed our chance.
Yeah, we could have had that.
He's also been made Wizard of New Zealand. I should say, Ben, the Christchurch City Council ended their contract with him in 2021.
Aww.
Oh, that's such a shame.
But a few months ago, he says he's going to continue freelancing.
I have to tell you, Louis, we do have a wizard. If you go to Sutton High Street, you will find the wizard. Sutton, yeah, and sort of just beyond Southeast London. You will find Conrad Pugsley, which is an belter of a name, the wizard man of Sutton, who walks up and down the high street in flowing robes, ornate jewellery, and his cat called Zagon perched on his shoulder. He's one of these public eccentrics who skirts the line between enjoyable member of the local community and cause for concern.
Mm.
I used to work as a street charity fundraiser, and I would work in Sutton. It was a fine hunting ground for charitable people. I would see the Wizard of Sutton walking up and down with his huge staff and imperious cat and, frankly, pungent smell of cat wee.
Did he ever give any money?
For him. I was never brave enough to approach him. Because obviously the spiel that you give people is, hey, I'd love you to donate to Amnesty International. We're not after much. Just give us the equivalent of a couple of pints a month. And I suppose I'd have to say to him, we're just after the price of a couple of flagons of ale or a couple of elixirs of phoenix tincture a month. And I just didn't have it in me to approach him.
Yeah.
He's one of these public figures. I hope he's still alive. He's the latest news story I could find of him was from 2018. So going into the pandemic, he's still with us. His full name, which you'll enjoy, the Divine Grace Conrad, Lord Azuram of Draconia Anglorum.
Wow.
So and the picture I've seen of him here, he's got the look of a badly kept cardinal. He's got like the vermilion skull cap that you know, you see cardinals of the Catholic Church wearing, and he's got like a wizarding smock. And the picture I've got, he's also holding a Sutton United FC scarf, which somewhat undermines the whole effect.
I've just looked him up. He has a Twitter. He hasn't tweeted since 2016, but his Twitter includes, "I'm casting spells for us to stay in Europe ahead of the EU referendum."
Oh, thanks, and Conrad.
So he's the worst wizard then.
Yes.
Yeah. And at Real Donald Trump, "My dad and granddad loved your approach to business and the Second Amendment. Love your work." Above a photo of Steptoe and son.
That is a real up and down journey, isn't it? Good Lord. So I then started looking at history. I went to the 13th century, where I found this fascinating chap called Michael Scott. He was a mathematician and a scholar born in Scotland. He was educated at Oxford and Paris and also worked in Bologna. So that's three of the major university towns, possibly even just before there were major universities there. And also Toledo. Toledo, we might remember, is where Eustace the Monk from our World's Worst Pirate episode studied black magic. Mm. And he also worked for Frederick II of the Holy Roman Empire, one of the most forward-thinking monarchs of the age. He is most infamous at the time as being the dedication in Fibonacci's famous book on mathematics, and it's been suggested that Scott played a part in the creation of the Fibonacci sequence. So yeah. He's like a real big player there. He's extraordinarily well traveled. It's suggested that he even traveled from beyond Toledo down into North Africa, where he hung out with the nomadic Tuareg people. Those are all the sort of pretty impressive common or garden historical facts. He is said to have turned to stone a coven of witches. He appears in Dante's Divine Comedy, the only Scottish person who does so, and he is located in the eighth circle of hell, reserved for sorcerers, astrologers, and false prophets. He's just a sidebar on that.
He's in the fourth Bulgia, which is like the circles are all divided into like ditches, and he's in the fourth ditch in the eighth circle alongside Tiresias.
Who's Tiresias?
The blind seer from Greek mythology.
He has suffered all, I think.
Yeah.
Yes, that's right. He is also credited with teaching magic to a chap called William de Sol. William de Sol then ends up in this particular ballad where he's accused of working with him, of being boiled alive. And Sol was known as one of the Wizards of the North, who was accused of going round sort of the Scottish and Northumbrian borders, drowning people and creating all sorts of havoc. Both of them have allegedly done remarkable acts. So William de Solis is said to have defeated a Northumbrian giant using magic, whereas Scott was said to have conquered an indefatigable demon by weaving ropes from sea salt and pulling it down into the waters.
Wow, that's cool.
Good image, isn't it?
Yeah. Distilling the salt from the water up into ropes and pulling it in. Yeah, I like that image.
Yeah, so I liked him a lot. And then
he liked water. He split a river, didn't he? The River Tweed or something like that. I think he.
Oh, I missed that.
There's the River Tweed. There's the sort of three peaks in the Eildon Hills above Melrose, and apparently Michael Scott is responsible for cleaving the hills into three, and running the River Tweed around them.
It's not a very magical name, Michael Scott, is he? So like he sounds like your accountant's golf partner.
I'm pretty sure that's the name of the character in The Office in America.
It is, yeah, and I think that's deliberate. Actually, I think they, because this guy's a mathematician, is what he's sort of kind of known for as well. It's, you know, it's kind of a boring-ish job, right. And the office, they sell paper. So I think it's a little nod to a little known historical figure, from what I've read on the internet with interviews with the creators.
Oh wow,
that's a good fact.
That's a really good fact.
What, one T in R. Scott, two T's in Michael Scott in The Office, I think, though.
Yes.
But I like, he's one of these figures that every couple of years, the Scotsman newspaper does an article about him saying, this forgotten figure from history. But like, you know, you've written about him 2 years ago and 2 years before that. He's not that forgotten if you keep running the same article, basically.
This semi-remembered figure from history.
Yeah. Doesn't have as many biographies as Churchill figure from history.
Yeah, no, that sort of, yeah, that's no benchmark to measure people by. Yeah.
The other major person I looked at was someone called Saint-Germain. Well, to give him his full title, the Comte de Saint-Germain, who was a European adventurer. He was like the man of his age, so he hung around in the 1600s, 1700s. He was into his science and alchemy and arts and writing and music, and he toured the courts of European high society, and he had a huge number of different aliases. He could be the Marquis de Montferrat, the Comte Bellarmine, the Chevalier Schoening. His main claim to wizarding was that he was 500 years old. And Voltaire sarcastically described him as the Wonder Man because he does not die and knows everything. And you can sort of hear him saying it in a very withering turn of phrase. But rumours abounded that his longevity took him all the way back to the times of Christ. He was able to... Basically, he appeared at the age of 45 at all times. And it's been claimed that whilst he most commonly appears in the sort of late 17th, early 18th century, but he was last seen in the 1970s.
Paris Saint-Germain. Is that they get him to turn into a football team? That was his greatest magic trick of all. He was really wealthy as well. He was like, they're not entirely sure who he, like, even the Wikipedia article describes him as a European adventurer, because no one really knows where he came from. The suggestions he may have been Transylvanian, but he had jewels and was very well educated, evidently. And worked as a diplomat.
No one's been able to find records of any of his bank accounts, which... Obviously, like, nowadays, you'd look at that and go, either spy or oligarch, but 500 years ago, it's just, like, obvious wizarding immortal. There was...
The other thing I like about him is that Casanova met him.
Yes.
Did they sleep together?
I mean, Casanova probably, went through all of the furniture in the house they were in for us. But, yeah, he wrote, "This extraordinary man intended by nature to be the king of imposters and quacks would say in an easy, assured manner that he was 300 years old, that he knew the secret of the universal medicine, that he possessed a mastery over nature, that he could melt diamonds, professing himself capable of forming, out of 10 or 12 small diamonds, one large one of the finest water without any loss of weight. All this," he said, "was a mere trifle to him. Notwithstanding his boastings, his barefaced lies, and his manifold eccentricities, I cannot say I thought him offensive. In spite of my knowledge of what he was, and in spite of my own feelings, I thought him an astonishing man, as he was always astonishing me."
Yeah, I mean, he does sound a remarkable man. He allegedly is recorded as dying on February the 27th, 1784. A year later, he was seen in Germany with Anton Mesmer, the inventor of mesmerism. And so some people claim that it was Saint-Germain who gave Mesmer the idea for mesmerism, which went on to influence hypnotism. He apparently turned up at a Freemasonry convention in 1785.
Sorry, the word convention when it's in the 1700s sounds so funny. Yes.
I'm just imagining them all cosplaying as Freemasons.
Yeah. of course it's conventions that they invented secret handshakes. That makes so much sense now.
Yeah.
It's a frat in-joke.
He is said to have turned up at the Bastille during the French Revolution. Then he took on another identity in the early 1800s of Major Fraser, who lived alone, never alluded to his family, was lavish with money, possessed marvellous knowledge of all the countries in Europe at all periods, and he claimed that he knew Nero and had spoken with Dante. I mean, the reputation he had was for being a wizard, but the more I read about him, I'm like, definitely vampire. Definitely vampire.
Yeah. A blurry line.
Yeah,
really blurry lines. All of these guys, they're a bit too cool, aren't they? Like, Saint-Germain is kind of cool. Michael Scott is kind of cool. So for the actual worst wizard, I'm going to go to Disneyland, where I found the most remarkably weird and cringe thing ever. This is from the original Disneyland in 1955. And if you went there, you would go down Main Street, and there'd be various shops that you could visit. And they were all sponsored by outside corporate entities. And one of these was the Hollywood Maxell Brasier Company of Los Angeles, which operated a store inside the park called Intimate Apparel Brasier's Torsolettes. It was known as a corsetaria, which is, I know, a remarkable term. And
honey, honey, I need to get some new pants.
Yeah.
And in order to get those, I need to pay the entry fee and queue to get into Disneyland. Because M&S won't do.
It's an unlikely marketing pitch, but you can see where it would work.
Did the two bras look like Mickey Mouse's ears? The two cups.
I don't know, but God almighty, I hope so.
I'm wondering if it's like you go on one of the water rides and you get all wet and then you need pants, you know?
That's true.
That's such a good point. Yeah, or maybe you could wear the bras as a sort of like swimming hat.
Yeah, that's an option.
The 50s, anything goes.
Yeah, they wrote a song about it. If you went into the Corsetaria, there would be a very exciting, very modern-seeming feature of three-dimensional images of women who, if you looked at them at one angle, they were fully dressed, and from the other angle, they're there in their corsets. It's a little bit one of those pens that lorry drives in the 80s had, where you've turned it one way and there is a clothed woman and upside down and she's in the nude.
Is it that they didn't want kids to see, so the kids had to walk one way around the display and the browsing parents could go the other side?
Maybe. But the best bit of this, you might be wondering, this is all very good, Ben, but where is the wizard? Well, the wizard, my friends, was a full-size automaton wearing a turban known as the Wizard of Bras.
Suck that, Rigby Impeller.
Yeah. And the Wizard of Bras would...
Why was he wearing a turban?
I don't know, Louis. I can't get...
I thought you were going to say he was wearing a bra, to be fair. So, you know. Madonna took one look at the hat and thought, I have an idea for a cone. Yeah. For a cone-shaped bra, like that wizard's hat. Did they spell it with a Z, like Oz?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, amazing.
So he was on a revolving stage... And
it was animatronic.
Yes, it was an animatronic turban-wearing Wizard of Bras.
This could be a great version of Big. Like instead of that guy in the box, it's the Bra Wizard. I don't know what he turns you into, but
A cabaret girl.
Yeah.
And so the Wizard of Bras would stand there and would basically expound on the history of apparel and lingerie. It's one of those stories where I read it and reread it and don't really understand what's happening or why it's there. It only lasted 6 months in the park before the execs at Disneyland really went, what on earth are we doing? We need to get rid of this immediately.
So sorry, it was a Disney animatronic that was like voicing stuff in a bra. It's a C cup after all. It's a C
cup. But what happened to this animatronic wizard? Because I want it.
Oh, yes. I don't know.
That would get a conversation started, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Bring out the bra wizard.
In the walk-in wardrobe, yeah.
Yeah, what you'd want... No, I'd want it to be my robot butler.
Yeah.
Right.
I think the reason it was there was because it was meant to be... Obviously, in the 1950s, if you were a husband accompanying his wife going bra shopping, it was, you know, obviously... considered very shameful or embarrassing. So I think this was like something for the lads.
Right.
But I don't know what happened to the Wizard of Bras. I'll be honest, guys, it never occurred to me that I should find out.
just probably just redressed him as Captain Hook and put him in a different part of the park.
I think as well that the Wizard of Bras was...
Sorry, please never stop saying that phrase.
Wizard.
See the wizard.
Wonderful wizard bra. I might need a moment. So I started thinking about Harry Potter, but I'm like, he gets enough airtime. He's a terrible wizard, but don't care. Anyway, another one I looked at was John Constantine. He is a truly terrible wizard. But I know you said that the general tone of the show is quite light. And I was like, I'm not sure I want to go into kind of horrendous years of guilt and suffering. And, you know, it's a bit heavy. Like, he's a terrible wizard, though. Rincewind, too obvious. So then I came to Rupert Giles of Buffy. Now, Rupert Giles is the authority figure of Buffy, so in theory you should think he's good at being a wizard. But there's just so many times when he fails abjectly. And I think that's quite important for a show that's actually about teenagers, because you kind of want them to have their own autonomy and it's not really about the adult characters. But I don't, have you seen the musical episode of Buffy?
Yes.
Okay, so
it's basically the one episode of Buffy.
Okay, so there's a song. So there's various songs, and there's a demon that's killing people, and they have to work out why he's killing people through the medium of song. And in one of the very first songs, Giles actually comes up with the correct solution, that it's a demon, a dancing demon, and then he dismisses it. And the rest of the episode, people are dying, because he didn't trust his own judgment. And I think, when you're a wizard, you should always trust your own judgment. That's very important, because, you know, it's life and death stuff. And he's also a wizard who opened a shop full of highly magical objects on a hellmouth, and basically sells incredibly magical objects to anyone who comes through the door, including like Buffy's worst enemies. There's literally an episode where, you know, a hell god comes through the door and doesn't know who she is, so he just sells her the thing she needs for her ritual that will kill the world.
Because his whole thing is he's meant to be like Buffy's watcher, isn't he?
Yeah, like, so he's keeping an watcher, eye on her. And I think fundamentally that's kind of a problematic role anyway, because you find out eventually that the Slayers were created by the Watchers by basically shoving demons into young girls. So it's sort of it's a horrific system. And Buffy was good to get rid of it. But
he wasn't like, they weren't brave enough to do the job themselves.
And the whole Watchers Council setup is very much like they do the admin and the Slayers do the dangerous stuff. But he's also got this kind of dark past where as a youthful wizard he summoned demons and it all went very wrong and all his friends died. So yeah, I think it's sort of, I thought it was pretty interesting in shows where like there's supposed to be someone that's like the sensible authority figure, and then in Buffy they reveal that actually he was a horrible punk and also is part of this organization that's basically quite abusive. So he's my pick for worst wizard. And I think the runner up was Gandalf, because Lord of the Rings Gandalf, firstly, he never does any magic. Like, can you name one spell that Gandalf has done?
Yeah, he does the fireworks at the start.
He does
basically
fireworks.
It.
Like, fireworks are, you know, I can buy fireworks.
He speaks to a butterfly. We can all speak to butterflies, mate.
Basically a physical fight with a fire demon, but, like, he loses.
Yeah.
And basically he dies and disappears, and he's just never there. And also he entrusts the ring to this, you know, helpless hobbit.
He's outsourcing his work. It's lazy, isn't it?
It's lazy.
It's like Giles as
well. It's kind of some Elon Musk stuff, you know? And also,
Gandalf's Hyperloop is still.
Also, you could have used the equivalent of the Hyperloop, which is just call your mate the Eagles, which you don't do until the very end. Could have done it at the start.
Such a plot hole.
Yeah, so I think
that book does not need the Eagles at the end as an out.
No.
You can let Frodo die, or you can have him rescued after a great battle or something like that.
But don't give away that you could have solved it right at the start. Yeah. So basically, the more I thought about different wizards, the more I think they're all awful. I think wizards are fundamentally bad, because they sort of represent something kind of like arrogant and dangerous about the human spirit. And maybe no individual should have too much power, and definitely not be left alone to stew in their power for too long and grow a long beard.
There's a lot of sort of calls to action from wizards, and rather than them doing the action themselves. A friend of the show, Johnny Chiodini, is a dungeon master for the popular D&D series on YouTube, The Oxventurers. And they play an NPC character who appears occasionally in the adventures called the Wizard Binbag. And the Oxventurers have taken to, particularly Andy Farrant, who plays Corazon, who's one of the characters in The Oxventurers. He has decided that any time Binbag shows up, he just is going to go, oh, this friggin' guy. He's just, oh, fuck, Binbag's here again, asking for us to go and do some nature shit on his behalf. So, which is a really funny take on, because in so much of fiction, a wizard character shows up and they're like revered sort of priestly characters.
What have they actually done? List me their accomplishments, you know?
Yes.
It's like, oh, but they are the great and mighty wizard, but what's on their CV, you know?
Yeah.
Top 10 achievements, skills.
It's true. I mean, it's a great role for like older actors, though. I mean,
oh yeah, no, it's true. I mean, like, definitely got to give people that work.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, McKellen and Christopher Lee on screen together is magic. Yeah. But when you zoom out a little bit and go, what has led to this point?
Yeah,
they're just two old men shouting at each other. is there much like wizardry in Norse mythology sort of on your mind at the moment? Are wizards a thing, or is it very much the magic, the preserve of gods?
No, it's more that there aren't wizards, there's witches.
Yes.
So, I mean, they're not called witches, so that's maybe the wrong way of, but it's sort of a female space is magic.
Mm.
I think they call them volvers, the witch characters, and the magic, I'm not going to pronounce this correctly, but it's something like Sethi.
Did you say volvers or volvers?
V-O-L-V-A.
Related?
Yeah, maybe.
Wow.
And so the gods have their own magic. And I mean, obviously the way I've kind of worked with it is I've, you know, extrapolated it into my own system of kind of internal coherence, because actually, you know, Norse mythology is definitely not D&D. They did not sit there and write the rule book. It's very much kind of an accretion of myths that, you know, disagree with each other over time.
Yes.
But so obviously in terms of the gods and the giants, they all have quite similar powers, and actually gods and giants are all related and they're not really separate species or anything. Because the first being in the world was a giant, and he gave birth to various other beings. I think some through his armpits, when his armpits sweated, and then his feet had relations with one another and gave birth. And that's how the gods came about. There's also a cow, and I can never remember how the cow comes into it, but this cow called, I think she's called Adumla, and she basically feeds Ymir, the primordial giant, and she gets nourishment by licking his rocks because they're salty.
Yeah.
And yeah, anyway, so the gods are kind of born out of the giants and then kind of intermarry. So I mean, I sort of make a thing out of Loki being, you know, half giant in the book, but so's Thor, like his mum's a giant. Yeah, his mum's a giant.
Oh.
And so, yes, yeah, so it's all very kind of, everyone's magic is kind of similar, and it's normally around kind of deception, turning into things, turning into, like, Loki turns into a biting insect and then bites someone the eyelid, which is nice. Obviously, he turns into a horse and then gives birth to an eight-legged horse. And I was doing some reading about why this horse had eight legs. And one of the ideas was actually, it's just someone's like, well, a horse with four legs is fast. So what would be the fastest horse in the world? A horse with eight legs.
Yeah.
Whereas I think it would be probably kind of like a coordination nightmare. But so that's Sleipnir, who has the eight legs. But there's sort of, in addition, kind of more in Viking society, there was this sort of magic based around wands. And they found, I think, metal wands in kind of tombs, and there was specifically women doing it. So that idea of the wizard isn't really there. But I do feel like Odin is kind of a wizard. Like, he's got a very Gandalf vibe. And he's always wearing hoods and stuff and turning up in mysterious places and kind of telling people to do stuff and then going away and not facing the consequences. That's pure wizard, isn't it? It's the kind of not taking responsibility for any of your actions, but holding other people accountable.
Yeah, yeah. It's very much putting other people in harm's way.
Yeah. Whereas I think Loki's probably the anti-wizard, because he does kind of turn up and cause trouble, but he always has to face the consequences himself.
Yeah.
So he always ends up playing himself.
I just had I brought up the list of spells that wizards in D&D use. Mm-hmm. And they've got things like, you know, Firebolt and Lightning Lure and True Strike and all of these amazing things they could be. Earth Tremor, all of these amazing things they could do. And yet, I'm just thinking back to Gandalf, and basically all he does is the spell Dancing Lights. You create up to four torch-sized lights within range, making them appear as torches. And this list of spells that I found notes besides Dancing Lights. An amusing distraction, but you can usually accomplish the same thing using a candle or a torch. Like, come on, Gandalf, pull your figure out. You've got all of these. Don't you have any spell slots above first level? You could be properly... You could do this yourself, mate. You don't need a fellowship.
It's true, actually. Yeah, I think it's...
He's never leveled up, Gandalf.
Yeah. Well, I think it's always that trouble of, like, if you have a really super powerful character, you've got to find ways of either kind of hobbling them, like killing them, or they have to have a kryptonite equivalent, or...
So you think they've nerfed Gandalf? Tolkien nerfs Gandalf deliberately just for the sake of fiction.
I do actually remember looking up a list of Odin's spells, which I don't think he actually uses in most of the stories. but like, for instance, he can alter the path of an arrow in flight, which could be quite useful.
Yeah.
And
like that, that terrible James McAvoy movie, which name like kind of escapes me at the moment, where they can basically shoot round corners.
Right. And he can also turn curses or spells back on the person that does them, which could be useful.
Oh, that's quite nice.
And also, he can put out any fire he wants to, no matter how large.
Oh, wow.
So he's actually got some quite useful spells that really Gandalf should have learned.
Okay, that feels like slightly reactionary, though. It feels like... it's all like diverting the bullet thing, or the diverting arrow is quite cool, but then basically using someone else's magic against them, or putting out a fire rather than being able to light their own fire.
It's true, it's not very generative magic, is it? He speaks of dead, reaction. Handy?
Yeah, that's good. I mean, he's in Valhalla anyway, so imagine he's got...
Yeah, well, just all he's got quite a lot dead around.
Whereas what we're learning is Loki is the more cool foot.
Yeah, basically Loki is much more awesome.
We need to revisit our World's Worst D&D class episode and maybe give warlocks a break and say wizards actually pull your fingers out.
Did you guys ever do LARPing?
No, the nearest I've got to LARPing is playing football in my back garden whilst wearing a full strip.
Very good. So Rupert Giles of Buffy.
Yes.
Finally Anthony Head will have to answer for his crimes.
Yeah.
A horse named Wizard was second in the Derby in 1809, and then his son, Young Wizard, was second in 1817. No word on whether Wizard III ever competed in the Derby. I read a bit about wizards in the Bible as well. They're mentioned quite a lot in the Bible. You get a lot of warnings to, you know, avoid them or even to punish them. In Leviticus, regard not them that have familiar spirits, neither seek after wizards to be defiled by them. In Deuteronomy, don't sacrifice your sons or daughters in the fires on your altars. Don't try to learn what will happen in the future by talking to a fortune teller or by going to a magician, a witch, or a sorcerer. Don't let anyone try to put magic spells on other people. Don't let any of your people become a medium or a wizard. And no one should try to talk with someone who has died. The Lord hates anyone who does these things.
So he loved everyone. That's harsh.
Yeah. And in Revelation, right at the end of the Bible, you have the person who overcomes will inherit these things. I will be his God and he will be my son. But people who are cowardly, unfaithful, detestable, murderers, sexually immoral, sorcerers, idolaters, and all liars will find themselves in the lake that burns with fire and sulfur. This is the second death.
Isn't that some writing?
So, yeah, it's great writing. And to be fair, I mean, if Odin ends up in that fire, at least he'll be able to put it out, I suppose, and save the rest of them.
I quite like the idea of, all the gods from other pantheons and ending up together and kind of busting out of hell.
Yeah, well, off the back of that, I did read about criticism about Harry. We may as well mention Harry Potter. Criticism about Harry Potter in the Catholic Church. The official exorcist of the Archdiocese of Rome, Gabriella Amorth, believed that behind Harry Potter hides the signature of the King of Darkness, the Devil. Cardinal Ratzinger, before he became Pope Benedict, wrote in two letters in 2003 that the books create subtle seductions that deeply distort Christianity in the soul before it can grow properly. And Professor Eduardo Rialti described Harry Potter as the wrong kind of hero and said that despite several positive values that can be found in the story, at the foundations of this tale is the proposal that of witchcraft as positive, the violent manipulation of things and people thanks to the knowledge of the occult, an advantage of a select few, the ends justify the means because the knowledgeable, the chosen ones, the intellectuals know how to control the dark powers and turn them into good. This is a grave and deep lie because it is the old Gnostic temptation of confusing salvation and truth with a secret knowledge.
That old Gnostic temptation, honestly, trouble.
Yeah, we've all fallen prey to it in the past. Yeah. And in Poland, in 2019, in the city of Koszalin, or Gdansk, they publicly burned books, including Harry Potter, Twilight, and others. And they quoted a passage from the Bible from the Acts of the Apostles, saying that many of those who had practiced magic collected their books and burned them in front of everyone. So they calculated their value and found it to be 50,000 pieces of silver. So, yeah, they had a good old book burning in 2019.
I'm all for burning books when Twilight is involved.
Yeah, yeah, you sort of make an exception for that, to be fair.
Yeah, it's often you end up finding you kind of agree with your enemies on certain things, not for the same reasons, but, you know, like...
Yes, exactly.
It's terrible, but not for the reasons they think it is.
Yeah. I read about John Dee, Queen Elizabeth's advisor and personal magician. John Dee was her astrological and scientific advisor, to give him his sort of his actual title. He chose her coronation date. He became a Protestant to appease her. And from the 50s and 70s, he helped oversee a lot of England's voyages of discovery. He devised a lot of new methods in navigation. And he is possibly the first person to use the term British Empire at the time as well.
So we're blaming magic for the British Empire now. It wasn't us, Gov. Wasn't the creation of capitalism and rapaciousness. Yeah. It was it was magic.
It came to John Dee in a vision. So Dee was very big into trying to communicate with angels. That was his big passion throughout his entire life. And he partnered up with a person called Edward Kelly. Kelly was much more interested in alchemy than in scrying and so on. But together with Kelly's big value to Dee was apparently he was a medium, and Kelly said to Dee that he could understand and scribe the language of angels. They developed a language which the angels apparently were dictating to Kelly. It was named after Enoch in the Bible, a figure who walks with God, and the Enochian system is said to be the angels' language. Now, it's largely made up of lots of bits of different languages that Kelly was able to speak, which he sort of bolted together.
Esperanto.
It's essentially, you know, it's a bit of English, it's a bit of French, it's a bit of Latin, whatever you're having.
Or actually me on holiday, because I'm like, I speak French, but when I go to other countries, yes. I'm just being like, so Spanish is kind of halfway between French and like Italian, right?
So saying is that you went on holiday, you tried to order a beer, and instead you accidentally summoned some angels.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then they brought me a beer. It was awesome.
They travelled Europe together. They travelled throughout England and throughout Europe, Dee and Kelly. Dee's son, Arthur, said there was no little tension between the two of them because Dee seems to have driven Kelly to the brink of insanity, forcing him to perform long scrying sessions on a near daily basis.
Wow.
So Kelly had sort of, you know, Kelly may have been believed what he was saying, but there is an appearance to this that he was basically just riding on John Dee's coattails, and he was 25 years younger than him. But after a while, him saying he could talk to angels meant Dee was just constantly waking him and going, can you talk to the angels now? I need you to talk to the angels for me because you can understand them and I don't. They caught the attention of the Catholic Church in Prague. They were required to defend themselves in a hearing with the papal nuncio. Kelly is said to have infuriated the nuncio so much when he said that one of the problems of the Catholic Church is the poor conduct of many of the priests, that the nuncio wrote in a letter that he was tempted to toss Kelly out of the window, defenestration being quite popular in Prague at the time.
Yeah.
Dee apparently was so obsessed with this that eventually Kelly told Dee that the angels had appeared to him and said that they needed to swap wives. Now, there's a suggestion that Kelly was putting this to Dee as a way of finally trying to, you know, break the link between the two of them, saying he'd gone too far, we'd never speak again. And you know, swapping wives would damn their souls to hell, according to their beliefs. But Dee instead went, well, I remember Abraham sacrificed his son for God, so we gotta swap wives. His wife, Jane Dee, despised Kelly, but nevertheless, she became pregnant and 9 months later gave birth to a child. And so that seems to very much put the nail in the coffin eventually, but maybe not in the way that Edmund Kelly foresaw. They parted ways in 1589 and Dee and his family returned to England. I found another modern day wizard as well, Ben, like the one that you did. Devin Pearson is the professional wizard of New York. He carries out meditation sessions. He encourages those who attend his sessions to sample the flavors and energy of each cloud formation as if you were walking around Costco's different free sample stations. Smile like the sun on the raisin bran box, and float like Michael Phelps diving into the pool. He has really, you know, monetized the whole thing. He has a website with the motto on it, Merlin, Gandalf, Dumbledore, Devin Pearson. He says on his website, I'm a humble 21st century incarnation of the wizard archetype, playfully blurring the line between fantasy and reality. Wizards are helpful guides who bring magic, mystery, wisdom and hope to the societies in which they serve. As a modern wizard, my life's work is to help you, yes, you, specifically you, create a slightly better reality. To make the world a more magical place, here are a few things I do as a wizard. Ride New York's subway system in full wizard robes, granting wishes to commuters. Host events leading immersive magic rituals, guide meditations, and perform hypnosis. Create onboarding wizards for major tech companies to help them guide new users through complex processes.
Onboarding wizards.
Yeah. Work one-on-one with individuals looking to create magical change in their own lives. He does $150 for a one-on-one meeting or $400 to $500 to create a ritual, although he sometimes does pro bono rituals. And he also interviews guests on his participatory digital ritual, This Podcast is a Ritual. sorry, like his calling came to him in 2014. He had a rare knee condition which flared up, and he was told he'd never walk without a cane for the rest of his life. But then he tried some experimental new medication, which began to have a positive effect. But it also turned all his hair white. He's only in his mid-30s, but he decided that with the white hair, wizardry was the way forward for him.
Yeah, sounds like fate. Actually, I just what you were saying about him kind of helping people with technology and stuff. A software wizard is like when you get a pop-up box that helps you.
Yes.
So there are actually Clippy wizards in all of those. Inside every computer.
Yeah. So Clippy.
Clippy is actually a wizard. He's definitely the worst wizard.
To be fair, if they'd made him look like the bra wizard rather than paperclip.
You appear to be wearing a bra.
Yeah. Do you need help unclipping that, men? a quick bit about the Wizard of Oz before I tell you about my world's worst wizard. Do you know the full name of the Wizard of Oz?
No, you'll have to fill this in.
He's Oscar Zoroaster Porig Isaac Norman Henkel Emmanuel Ambroise Diggs. Mm-hmm. In Dorothy and the Wizard of Oz, he reveals that that's his full name. But obviously he shortened that name to his initials, Oz Pinhead, O-Z-P-I-N-H-E-A-D. But then he realised the word pinhead was in it, which is why he shortens it even further to Oz. and he's a con man from Omaha, Nebraska, as revealed at the end of the film. He was working in a circus, using his magic tricks and so on. And he had OZ on the hot air balloon for promotional purposes that he, we talked about the world's worst pilot recently. P.T. Barnum had hot air balloonists as part of his show, so it wasn't unusual for balloonists to be part of it. And they had Oz on the side of the balloon. He got carried away in the wind to Oz, and that's where he found himself worshipped as the wizard. And this bit of the story is probably inspired by a real life figure L. Frank Baum will have probably heard of, Washington Harrison Donelson. He was born in 1814 in Philadelphia and died in 1875, and he was a balloonist who indeed ended up working for P.T. Barnum. Now, his early life, he did work as a gymnast, a ventriloquist, he was a magician, he was a tightrope performer. He walked across the Schuylkill River on a tightrope, 1,200 feet long, in 1862, returned to the middle of it and finished it off by jumping into the river from 90 feet. He walked across a river in Rochester, New York, on a rope, 1,800 feet across, and then recrossed with a man at a wheelbarrow in front of him. And then he started doing balloon acts, and he became quite famous for, you know, the accidents he had with his balloons as much as anything else. But yeah, Barnum hired him to travel around with him, and he would ascend in his balloon with passengers and often land hundreds of miles away. On the 19th of October, 1874, he took a wedding party up into the air from Cincinnati, with the ceremony being performed in midair. And in 1875, he ascended from Toronto, taking three newspaper reporters with him. They were carried out over Lake Ontario, eventually descending into the water through which they were dragged for several miles before they were saved by a ship, which happened to be passing. Donelson disappeared in July 1875. He ascended from the lakefront in Chicago with Newton S. Grimwood of the Chicago Evening Journal. And they floated up across Lake Erie, and about an hour and a half later they disappeared. And then a violent storm struck that night, and Grimwood's body was washed ashore on the far side of the lake. But Donelson and No trace of the balloon was ever found.
Definitely to us,
he disappeared. So that's the story of a balloonist, part of a traveling circus, disappearing in a storm. It's almost certainly the inspiration for L. Frank Baum.
Wow.
And the wizard himself invents the mobile phone.
What?
There are lots of Oz books, as we've mentioned on the podcast before. It's not just The Wizard of Oz. And in the eighth Oz book, TikTok of Oz...
TikTok.
I know. He didn't invent TikTok. He invented TikTok as well. We've got him to thank for everything.
TikTok is in that terrifying Return to Oz film.
He is, yeah. He appears in several Oz books, yeah. I think. Actually,
but that was TikTok's the most scarring.
That's a really scary one. But it has this section. Two instruments recorded the same delicate vibrations of sound and formed a wireless telephone, an invention of the wizard. Those separated by any distance were thus enabled to converse together with perfect ease and without any wire connection. This is in 1914 that he wrote this. So getting ahead of the game there.
That's even my kind of like person who invented something earlier than they should have done thing is always Ian Forster inventing the internet. But that was later than 1914.
Did he?
Yeah. So in The Machine Stops, it's a society where everyone communicates to each other through screens, and seeing people in person is kind of verboten. And it's the story of what happens when basically the Wi-Fi's down and society
Turns
to barbarism. But yeah, no, Ian Forster. So never mind all the like ladies in hats and stuff. It's all about his sci-fi.
That's amazing. Oh, cool. I did not know that. But for my World's Worst Wizard, I'm almost taking us back to the beginning, Ben. We've gone full circle here. Because my worst wizard is a wizard who annoyed the Wizard of New Zealand. Yeah.
Okay.
This is a story from Christchurch, Arana Wildlife Park in New Zealand. A chap called Andrew Wright, a self-proclaimed wizard and energy healer, was banned from the wildlife park after chanting and beating his chest at the gorillas. Andrew Wright's actions annoyed one of the gorillas so much that the gorilla charged at the glass and tried to attack him. Gorilla keeper Rob Clifford told Wright to knock it off. He was clearly upsetting the gorillas with whatever wizardry he thought he was carrying out. And so he ignored him. Wright ignored the guy who is a gorilla expert and said, "No, my wizardry is having a positive effect on them." And he had membership for the park, which was revoked indefinitely. And the Wizard of New Zealand went on record to say, "We don't normally go out and beat our chests in front of gorilla cages. It's not the normal behaviour of wizards. You wouldn't get merit points for that." Which sounds very much like, "I'm not angry, I'm just disappointed."
Yeah. So he was quite gentle about it, though. He could have been pretty savage.
Yeah, exactly. But I just think he comes across as such a decent person, yeah, and like quite a likable eccentric, that to disappoint the Wizard of New Zealand, you must really have like done something bad. So I've gone with Andrew Wright, gorilla botherer extraordinaire. So our suggestions for the World's Worst Wizard are Ben's suggestion of the busty Wizard of Braz in Disneyland in the 1950s, Louis' suggestion of Anthony Head's incarnation of Rupert Giles, the man who uses teenagers as a human shield over a hellmouth, and my suggestion of Andrew Wright, the primates pesterer of New Zealand. And I'm not going to lie, guys, it's going to be the Wizard of Braz, hands down. It's absolutely started strong, and I just, it's so inexplicably 50s and kitsch and Disney and terrible. I love it so much, and the picture of it is brilliant.
Yeah, none of it makes the slightest bit of sense, which sort of makes
the thing better. The thing I love about it is Disney has become such a self-calculating, like, careful brand. So and in the early days, they were just literally throwing spaghetti at the wall and seeing if it would stick. They were just going, "I don't know, wizard with a bra on it, I don't know."
That's very Monkey Tennis of them, actually.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, you'll enjoy this. I've just looked up the person doing the voice was the actual president of the Brazier company, and he's got the perfect 50s name. For the Wizard of Braz, he's called Herndon J. Norris.
The Chuck Norris of Braz.
When you wear the Chuck Norris of Braz, your breasts stay supported.
Yeah. So well done, Ben. Before we go, I've got to give you the world's best news of the week. And this comes from the tiny Republic of San Marino in the hills of central Italy. And San Marino is the world's oldest republic. It was founded in 301. It's one of a handful of medieval city-states in Europe that have survived, along with Andorra and Liechtenstein and Monaco. It's got a citizenry of fewer than 35,000. And they have just appointed the world's first openly gay head of state.
We've had
openly gay heads of government in Iceland and Ireland. The Prime Minister of Luxembourg and the Prime Minister of Serbia are all gay at the moment. But this is the first gay head of state. 58-year-old Paolo Rondelli.
So like king or queen kind of thing.
Yeah, the person who's like rather than heading the government, like the queen or the president in Ireland and so on. 58-year-old Paolo Rondelli. He is one of the two captains regent. They have captains regents as a head of state in San Marino. They only hold power for 6 months. The other captain regent is Oscar Mina, who previously also held the role in 2009. They don't have executive power or anything like that. But Rondelli is a deputy in the Great and General Council, which is San Marino's parliament. He was the country's ambassador to the USA for 9 years and is an outspoken LGBT activist. And the other thing that I really like about this is it was still illegal to be gay in San Marino until 2004, punishable with jail time. So it's a really quick turnaround.
Whiplash.
Legally recognised gay couples in 2016 legalised abortion since last year, much in the same way that Ireland has done sort of a very swift U-turn. It seems that like those gaps between decriminalisation and big steps forward are getting smaller and smaller. San Marino has previously started on the path of a profound revolution on the subject of rights, said Archigay Rimini, a gay rights organisation in the city of Rimini, which is 10 miles away from San Marino. And they say this path, seen from the point of view of bogged down Italy, is astounding. Italy voted down an anti-homophobia bill in the Senate last year. So well done, San Marino, for flying the rainbow flag over your tiny little hills.
Maybe they can sort out the UK. That'd be good.
Yeah, to be fair, San Marino is one of those places I think I might be misremembering this fact, but I think San Marino has never been invaded. Let me just double check this. San Marino is one of those countries that it's never lost an invasion. It's basically just three hills. Its coat of arms has three fortresses on it, which is the top of the screen. It's kind of impossible to invade effectively.
Well, do you know what, listeners? If we get to 250 patrons, then me and Barry will launch an invasion on San Marino.
And install me as their second gay head of state. Right, before we go, Louis, where can people find out more about you? Where can they get the book and all of that information?
So apparently walk into Waterstones and there you can get the book. But go to your local independent bookshop. Always got to plug those. And if you want to find me on the internet, I'm at louisstoll.com or at louisstoll on Twitter, which is easy. Like, having an unusual name is quite good because nothing's taken. So I've always been able to get, I never have to be like Louis Stoll 41 or anything.
That's good. Yeah. It's nice to have that SEO ability built into you from birth.
Thanks, Tom.
All right. Well, meanwhile, we're all off to open a bra shop above a Hellmouth and serve only gorillas. Thank you for listening to Westwood Forward. Goodbye.
Bye.